Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the weekly CCWGIG call of Thursday, May 8th, 17 UTC. Today we have received few apologies from participants that won't be able to attend the call. Those are Cristina Rossetti and Leon Sanchez. So far we have the following participants on the call. Those are Greg Chassin, Hagu Dafawa, Klaus Stoll, Oliver Kreplan-Leblond, Rafik Damak, Sarah Faovey, and from my staff we have Bart Bonswinkel, myself Fetya Minkova, Renat Duov, and Alexander Dans. Is there anyone in the Adobe Connect room, not in the Adobe Connect room, on the phone please? Okay, no one has mentioned anything. Rafik, you may have the floor, please.
Thank you, Petya, and thanks for everybody for joining today's call. So we have at the agenda for today two main items. It's left over from the last call. It's about Net Mondial Review, and then the second main item is about to try to finalize the charter. To have a last call later, maybe in the mailing list, to send it to the SO and ACs for approval. But first, we should go with the action item review to check if we have any, if we check it them or if there is something pending. For that, I will ask Olivier to.
Rafik, this is Petya. So the only one action item from 30th of April was for staff, myself, to send a doodle poll for the next CCWGO, which was done. So far from my part, I'm not aware of any other action items. Olivier, if he has anything to add.
Thanks, Petya, but I was going to ask if everybody agree with the agenda, so if there is no objection. I guess there is none, so yeah, we can move on. Thanks. So there is no any left action item, but we should check with Olivier if there is.
Olivier speaking.
Okay.
There are none. Thank you.
There are none. That's quick. Okay. So moving to second item about that one, the review and update. It's supposed to be done by Marilia, but I think she's not on the call. I'm trying to ping her, but no response yet. So in the meantime, maybe we can switch and start with the charter discussion. And if we have time and she's on later, we can go back to that item. Okay, so let's go with the charter. Peter, can you just share? Yeah, thanks. And I guess maybe Bart can give us some updates if there was any change in the inclusion of several comments. It was discussed in the last call.
Yeah, that's good evening, by the way, or good day. This is Bart. Petya is uploading. Maybe we can increase the size. You can look what is happening. Can you see it? Yeah.
150%. Anybody?
Yeah, this should do. Could you confirm that you can see it, please? Okay, thank you. So let me take you through the major changes, and they have all been, so this is the highlight version, or the compare version. So what I've done as a result of the last call and running through it again. So I think the major change is in the objective and scope of activity. So I've renamed it a little bit, in order to make clear it's the scope of activities and the objective of the working group, and reading through it again, and if you compare it with, say, the previous version, and maybe you've seen it, is in the original, in version 3, the objective contained a list of activities A through D. And some of these activities were included in the scope as well. So going through it again, our thought is change the order a little bit to make it clearer. So what you see now under scope of activities under these bullet points is similar to what you saw in the version 3 under A to D. So that is a major change if you compare it to the structure of version 3, and so, but not in content. So are there any questions regarding this change? No? Okay. And then, so what I've done under objective as well, I've included the, say, what is out of scope of the objective, and not out of scope of the activity. So that's why you see a red line here on the all issues, processes, etc. That was accepted. And for avoidance of doubt, etc., that's now also included under the objective. Scrolling down, if there are no questions, deliverables and time frames. Again, this is based on the discussions and the comments received during the last call. Again, the working plan, the work plan has been the reporting progress, so there are two mechanisms now, or reporting progress, there are two mechanisms. The co-chairs inform the SOs and ACs who have appointed them, and appropriate times, a progress report, a progress paper, then position papers and statements. Again, this is... this is reflecting, say, the changes we have made and some of the suggested language from Keith and Chuck Gomes. So let me go through it the other way. So now section 4, there's some changes here as well. I need to scroll down. The major changes were based on the discussion at the last call on the SOAC endorsement or support for the working group position paper and statement. I noticed Greg is on the call as well, and he suggested this, say, restructuring this, say, after submission, and then I separated in the two scenarios, in the event all participating SOs and ACs endorse it, and the second one if one or two SOs and ACs do not endorse or support the position paper or statement. And I think the language itself it's more streamlined. Are there questions regarding this particular section, and especially this subsection? No, scrolling down again. On the participants, and again, based on the discussion, again, there is a bit of a change of order. I started now with the co-chairs, that each of the SOs and ACs shall appoint a co-chair and who will liaise. The co-chairs are encouraged. And based on the discussion as well, and this is more for the internal workings of the working group, the co-chairs may, and this is just a proposal, the co-chairs may elect a chair and a vice chair if considered helpful to lead the working group, and after consulting the participants. So this is more an internal working mechanism where the working group does not need to go back to the SOs and ACs, so it's an internal mechanism. That's the reflection of the discussion. Regarding the members, again, this is a proposal and up for questions. I've now included the appointed co-chairs as one of the members for the minimum, so that you have at least one regular member. And finally, and this was a question as because that was noted, I've included this section here that's also included, and this is a direct copy of the cross-community working group on the framework for principles for cross-community working groups regarding the statement of interest. Please note, and I think we discussed it, some of the SOs and ACs are not familiar with the phenomenon of statement of interest, but and some in some others there is a requirement. So this was the text as proposed to the SOs and ACs who participate in that other cross-community working group, so I thought it might be helpful for this one as well. And make very clear, say, the experts. Are there any questions, remarks on this section?
Okay, I think we have Greg. He wants to ask something.
Yeah, Greg, please go ahead.
Hi, it's Greg Shatton. Just wanted to return to the membership issue for a moment. I've raised this issue before. Not exactly sure how to deal with it, but it's come up again in preparing comments on the steering group that was proposed by ICANN for the IANA transition.
Mm-hmm.
And after greater discussion, in various within my constituency, the IPC, realize that the GNSO is really an umbrella organization of seven completely different constituent groups, and the issue, for board purposes, it is what it is, that the contracting parties and the non-contracting parties each have one representative. And I can't speak for the registries and registrars as to whether they have a unity of interest or a opposing set of interests. But, with seven separate groups that happen to be within the GNSO, we just keep ending up excluding certain constituencies or certain really stakeholder communities from, participating directly in these groups. And maybe that can be solved to some extent through observer status. Or the like, but I, just note again that, at least within the commercial stakeholder group, in essence doesn't really exist as a group. You couldn't find it on the internet. It has an executive committee that consists of representatives of the constituents, but it's a shell. So if you choose one or two representatives from the CSG, you're leaving somebody out: the internet service providers, the intellectual property interests or the commercial users who generally don't advance intellectual property interests. So I put that out there for consideration. I know on one hand it makes things seem lopsided, but that's comparing the GNSO to, say, the CCNSO is a bit of apples and oranges in that sense that, these are different organizations with different memberships and different concerns. It would make most sense for each of the seven constituent organizations to have their own representatives rather than to be counted as some sort of mass of really mostly differentiated parties.
But I think, in essence, I'm not here to defend, because this is what you see in the other cross-community working groups as well. And it's a very fundamental issue, I think. But it's if you look at it, say, from the perspective, it can be resolved, first of all, as you noted, through observership. And secondly, and this is probably what is the real importance, is that at the end of the day, all these constituencies are represented on the council, on the GNSO council, and influence the GNSO council, and that this whatever this working group produces, it has to go through the GNSO council or the other councils, for that matter. So on the say what you see is that the interests are and the voices of the different constituencies can be heard and can be presented at working group level, either through observership or membership. At the end of the day, you never hope the membership will make and that's a matter of the co-chairs, make a difference. And secondly, if it really, say, comes to position papers and or statements, it goes back to the participating organizations, and each of these participating organizations will have their own internal rules and procedures to deal with it in order to endorse it or do not endorse a statement or position paper.
I recognize all of that. I note this as much for kind of further discussion, because the more time I spend kind of outside the GNSO and in cross-community and larger settings, the more I realize that the GNSO is a collection of organizations,
mm-hmm.
you know, more than it is an organization per se, and you know, get treated as an organization per se in ways and places where that ultimately it doesn't end up making as much sense as it should. It's simple, as it was in the steering group, to say we'll pick two from each without really considering what each was. You know, they picked two each from the ASO and the NRO, even though those organizations are identical. One
mm-hmm.
works for the other. So, you know, it just generally needs to be some more thoughtfulness. I don't want to necessarily upset the apple cart for this particular working group, since there are bigger issues in getting the different organizations together in a working group than this one. And I think this one, you know, might even, you know, raise issues that don't necessarily need to be raised, because of the. I'd rather focus on the importance of having functional cross-community working groups than this issue, which, as you say, can be solved at least ad hoc, and hopefully never raises an issue.
Yeah. Greg, I would use the terminology, and maybe that's something to note for future, and even as starting. At least it can be accommodated one way or the other, and
yes,
although it, and so that at least, and the voices of those who represent the different constituencies can participate and can be heard and can influence the work of the working group.
Okay, so thanks, Greg and Bart. GNSO is quite, the structure of GNSO is quite complex with the level of stakeholder group and constituency, and maybe it will be much more complicated with the new, new grouping, in particular because of the new GTLD program, and we are going to have soon a GNSO review. And I'm not sure how we can handle that. It's quite, we have several layers of complexity in GNSO. And I think the discussion about the representation, maybe it will be part of the work of the cross-community working group on cross-community working group principles. So it's even that the cross-community group is much more restrictive. My understanding is just really five members by SOAs and just 5 observers. It's much more, there is a limitation why, while here we are opening more for observers, and except that it's the vote when it's, I guess for the vote we would use it really only in, if the co-chairs may use it in only really in exception, as exception, it should not be the rule. So honestly, I don't know how we can find a solution that will satisfy all these parties, but...
I would say just to kind of keep an eye on the issue, and if it, as long as it feels that, you know, through, you know, kind of the open microphone and operation of consensus, that the various constituent elements of the GNSO are all participating, able to participate fully and not getting somehow squeezed out, I think it is, there's no need to create any changes to the membership. But it's just something I think to keep an eye on, maybe for the co-chairs to keep an eye on, as well as the GNSO representatives to keep an eye on, so that you know, the different organizations all feel that they are able to have their own direct say within the group, but not to make any formal change at this time.
I do agree, Greg. I think that's one of the I'd say the task of co-chairs is really to ensure that all parties are participating and they have a say. So it's not always easy, in particular for some SOAs, but it's the co-chairs have to work on that. I think Olivier wanted to comment since a while, but I'm not sure if he's still...
No, he's marked agreeing.
It's Olivier. He agreed. Everything I wanted to say has been said now, so thank you.
let me scroll. Any other questions regarding this section on... participants, so members, staffing, and organization. Let me scroll down, support staff and tools. So this now makes sense, the Keith Chuck Gomes regarding the SOY repository, making decisions, I've more or less accepted this. I just wanted to make sure that everybody is aware around consensus, because that was a topic for discussion, and it's a very fundamental. The language which is now included is the same language as in the cross-community working group on the on principles for cross-community working group. So the meta cross-community working group. I don't know if there, and let me, any questions on this particular part or any further remarks, because I know this was part of a lengthy discussion on the previous call. No further comments. I'll scroll down. And this was unclear as well in the previous charter, the omission and in or unreasonable impact of the charter. This now is again updated and should be one section. I'm sorry, but it's now similar to the cross-community working group or the meta cross-community working group as well. Any questions on this one? And then review of charter. I think there were no comments, and it wasn't discussed at the previous call. So these were the major changes.
Bartitz Olivier.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Olivier Crapin-Leblanc speaking. So... On the methodology and on the consensus versus no consensus, you didn't add anything in addition to what was there before, did you? Because
no.
the big discussion and the big concern, I guess, was the question which was asked by, was it Chuck Gomes, asking about the minimum, the guidelines, or something to define the consensus and no consensus, and
yes,
kind of left it at that.
It's and at the end of the day, if you look at it, the same. He raised the same question during the drafting session of the cross community working, say the Meta cross community working group, and there it was agreed. And I've checked again the language, and there it was agreed that that was the language, because as soon as you start fiddling with it, and this is again the role of the co-chairs, and if it comes to vote, but you never want to go there. Say the most important part, and I think Greg mentioned it as well, as long as if there is no consensus, however defined and how refined you want to get, as long as there are opposing views and you record the opposing views, then there shouldn't be any issue. If as a result of, say, even a small minority or a small majority would adopt a statement and the large minority would not, say, their views would not be reflected, then you have a major issue and then you need to go down to voting, etc. But I think the language used in the discussion in the... over consensus and no consensus in the cross-community working group was, are you willing to die in the ditch for it? And if you're not, then there is a kind of, yeah, I can live with it, etc. So you have rough consensus, however you want to define it. And please keep in mind, this is not about policy.
Okay, so it's Olivia speaking. So what you're basically saying in a nutshell is that if we don't define the different levels or layers of consensus, then we just let the group itself call it what it wants to call it when it actually takes place, when there's a discussion.
Yeah, and there are enough checks and balances and safeguards that, say, one group cannot overwhelm another one because of, say, you need to include, if there is a minority, their position needs to be included, even if it's a minority of one.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, thanks.
Thanks. I think only really, I'd say, the worst case is to have only minority view that there is no consensus at all, and then if we end up just to express only differences and not having a common, something in common. But I think that's unlikely to happen in our case. I don't see how it can happen, but
and maybe adding to that one, Rafik, and this is Bart again for the record, adding to that one, you might have an issue. Say, if there is an issue where there is no consensus, there is no basis to go back to the SOs and ACs to seek their endorsement.
Yeah, it just will be kind of listing of disagreement. And I think the only, even in term of policy, I don't recall happened that so often, maybe in the case of vertical integration, or maybe for the INGO-AGO case, while for the later there was expression of more minority views, but for the vertical integration that was an example of no real consensus. But
sorry, Rafik, go ahead.
What you see
in those instances where it becomes important, it is part of implementing policy or policy setting, and this is not about policy. This is out of scope of policy of all the SOs and ACs.
Yeah, I think so. It's the likelihood of such cases really, really low. But we have, I think, question from Rudy. Yes, Rudy, please go ahead.
Thank you, Rafik. Rudy, for the transcript. Well, as I mentioned in the chat room, and it's just something I'm trying to figure out if that is a case, yes or no. should the decision process that we are defining in the cross-community working group be aligned with the decision-taking process that is particular for each, thinking about having the decision-taking process that is in conflict with the rules, charters or bylaws of a specific constituency, and could overrule a decision taken in the cross-community working group. It's just a question that pops up in my mind.
I think if you would look at, and this is where it becomes important, if the working groups comes up with a position paper or statement, let me check, where is it? Is it up there or, no, it was, yeah, I don't know. Let me check which section. Making decisions, no, it's, let me scroll up again. Oh yeah, there you are. I think if you talk about statements and positions, and that's the real output of this working group, so documents, I think if you look at it, say every SO and AC has to decide according to it, their own rules and procedures. That's included in the charter. The working group, no matter how it concludes, has its own methodology to reach a conclusion or decide on a position paper or statement. Now, once, and I don't see any conflict there, because the working group first has to agree upon a position before it can submit it to an SO and AC, so it's sequential. And each SO and AC has to decide according to its own rules. And that's documented as well and included in the charter. Does that answer your question?
yeah, Rudy speaking. Yes, somehow it gives me already an answer of in fact, the end of my complex question. But initially, the process I'm looking into is if, for instance, a constituency has a specific way of taking a decision, if the working group has not the same process of taking a decision by rough consensus, by anonymity, whatever it could be, I'm just wondering if that could be overruled by an SO or AC as such, when within the SO or AC, and especially the SOs, I'm thinking about GNSO, where we have a complexity of constituencies. If some of the constituencies inside the GNSO thinks that it is the decision taken by the working group is not what they expect to have, that they could overrule it by using the decision process that is given within the SO, the GNSO itself. That's what I was thinking about, it, to avoid conflicting situations.
Do you mean while the working group is working on a item, or at the end when they've produced a position paper or statement?
At the end, when that specific constituency decides that this is bad for us, that we can only go against if we find a way to discuss about the process, the way that the decision has been taken, to try to influence and say, look, this is not as is chartered in our constituency, that's not as is chartered in the SO itself, so we claim that decision would be taken down.
But I want to respond to that. Rudy, for the endorsement, it will go to SO and ACs. In the case of the GNSO, it will go to the GNSO Council. where, like, for example, NCNG embedding NCNC and NPOC is represented there. So there will be a vote. I mean, it's because it will be a motion and vote and so on. There is no, I mean, kind of overruling by a constituency or stakeholder group, I mean, in the way to bypass the process just to refuse a deliverable. It's the SO and ACs, they will endorse or not. In the case of GNSO, that will go through the GNSO Council, where the stakeholder groups is represented there. So I'm not sure what's the problem you are seeing exactly. I mean, how at the level of constituency that can create the problem. But now, yes, Bart, if you want to.
No, I fully agree.
So, Rudy
speaking. I was just asking for clarity. I'm always happy when upfront processes that has to start that I can feel for myself. There will be no worries. I will not have any complexity in decision. If it's clear from the beginning, I'm quite happy. I'm just thinking about the fact, like it's happening now. If you have a deadlock vote, what's going on then?
So, if let's say GNSO Council, if basically it should be. How to say, let's say there is deliverable from the working group, so there should be a motion to endorse that deliverable, and depending, I think, it's just a simple majority, which I mean, I think at least have more than 50% in each house, so to endorse or support that deliverable. So, yeah, I mean, if you cannot find the support in both houses, so it's really that you don't have consensus on that deliverable, and it may happen. But in the case of what we are talking about really internet governance issue, I it's really unlikely that we have such disagreement, because we are following here a working group model. It means that we are working from the inception of the process on developing something and having the participation of the several parties. So through members and, I mean, observers, to ensure that they will try, those representatives will try to represent the point of view of their groups there and try to advocate for them and work with other parties to build the consensus position. So the work will be happening at that level. So when it goes then to, let's say, I'm just focusing because I guess you are really about GNSO Council, it's only if there is a really strong opposition, and it will be first, I think, expressed through the minority view in the deliverable itself. So if there are too many minority view from parties in GNSO side, it's unlikely that the GNSO Council will endorse such deliverables. So,
at this moment, yeah, maybe Rafiq, may I add something to it?
Yeah,
this goes back. Say, this is probably the other side of what Greg was hinting at. Is, and even assume this is the case, that some of the constituencies strongly oppose, say, a position from the working group. It is the safeguard that the GNSO Council cannot endorse it in order to allow, say, that the GNSO to participate. So it's more bringing in safeguards for all the SOs and ACs, etc., that at the end of the day, they do not commit up front on an outcome. They always have the ability to check the outcome. And if they disagree, then they disagree. That's not too bad to disagree. And put it this way, Rudy, in order to accommodate this, and this is again, in order to avoid that, say, once a SO or AC disagrees, there is always the ability for the working group to adjust their position paper or statement, or so their output, if they think it's a bridgeable gap. If there isn't, yeah, then it stops. But say there is always the ability to move the process forward.
Yes, well, thank you, Bart and Rafik, for the explanation. It helps me clarify my mind and avoid having black holes where I wonder how to solve. So thank you very much for the...
Thanks, Rudy. It was a good opportunity to explain how it can happen. Should we? Yeah, please continue.
I don't have anything to add anymore. It's over to you. Say, I've explained what I've done and the major changes. So, if there are no further questions, it's over to you and Olivier, how you want to proceed.
Okay. I think we have this version which includes a lot of comments. So, if we don't hear any comments here in the call, I think what we should do is to send maybe a clean version of this document and this also, this redlined commented version. And I think we should proceed, if Olivier agrees, we should proceed with last call via the mailing list maybe for the next 3-4 days, maybe much more because it's include weekend, and if there is no objection, I guess it will be a good time to send to SO and ACs, because I'm also worried because there are other planning for other cross-community working group, and I think we need to act quickly, otherwise we will be not in high priority. So, but I will ask Olivier what you think about this. Olivier?
Thanks very much, Rafik. It's Olivier Crapin-Leblanc speaking. So you mentioned asking for a last call, and I have sent an email to the mailing list on the 2nd of May where I was asking for everyone to look at the call's agenda page and to look at the minutes of the call and to have a look at the last version of the charter and said this is really the last straight line. So I'm in two minds to think it's sending another last call, except, of course, if we do give it another last call, and no matter what happens, we will send it at the next call. I'm a little concerned at the moment that we're spending an enormous amount of time on the charter, really, and not really moving forward. And as we reach closer to the June meeting, as you mentioned, the chairs of SOs and ACs are not going to be particularly interested in this. We'll be busy with other things, and we'll have very little chance of having this whole group chartered in time. And then, of course, you've got the summer afterwards, etc., etc. I would suggest maybe a few days last call, and unless there are significant changes, then we move forward and send it over to the chairs of SOs and ACs. And put it in their hands, basically, and ask that we get a reply soon from them.
Rafik and Olivier, this is Bart. Please note, say, Peja posted these both this version and the changes. So a note on the changes and a clean version on the wiki page of the working group.
Okay.
Thanks, Bart. It's Olivier again. But did we actually issue a last call?
I can't recall it. So maybe based on this one, is issue a last call up till Tuesday or something. So
yeah,
people
that works
have
for
the
me.
Opportunity. Yeah.
Works for me. It's Olivier.
So we will issue last call, the last call or the last call for this time, and after that we can move move forward and send to the SO and AC. So, Olivia, how many days should we allow for the last call? 3, 4, 5 days?
Deadline Tuesday?
Tuesday?
We can have deadline Tuesday in time for the next call, and then the next call then, having received all of the input in the last call, we will be able to discuss the input that has been received. If there is no input received, then we can, during the next call, make the decision to then send it to the SO and AC chairs. So obviously we'd have to have a next call next week, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, and
last call we close by Tuesday, yeah. So then we have time to include, or both have time to include any changes or any amendments to the last session.
And maybe for all, say, if you look at the charter, at the draft charter, it is proposed to do, if you make changes, and this is the impact of doing stuff in two readings. So we went through it, there are no amendments, now it's in order to allow everybody else, say, and in your last call you can even mention there were no changes suggested from the participants, so now we go into the second reading before the last call. So if you have any comments, that's the final it. So this is how you see that rule working and applying for the working group.
Okay, so we will allow comments, you mean we can allow amendments too?
That's the impact of, let me take you to the specific one on the methodology. This is how the methodology works. Two members, where is it? Working process, no, working methodology, participants, scroll down. Making decisions. It's this section. Its consensus call should always utilize best efforts to involve the entire working group and include at least two readings of a paper, position paper, or statement to allow all participants to state their views. And this is effectively what you're doing right now. So now we had the first reading with a limited group, and now you invite, as co-chairs, you invite the entire working group to again send in comments as second read.
Okay. And then in the last call, we'll decide. Okay.
And then you can designate either a consensus, and if there are too many fundamental comments, yeah, then you have an issue. But at least this is the way how you work through it. This is how the charter is, a living charter.
Okay. Interesting. We are going to start working with the charter before approve it yet. Yeah, okay. Works for me. Okay. That's an action item. We have to send for the second reading, the last call asking people for comments, so on, and that should be done before, deadline should be Tuesday, so before the next call. And then the next call, we'll discuss quickly and decide if we have consensus on this charter, and then if we can send to the SO and ACs. Okay? I think, is there any other comment here? And Peter, please write this down as an action item. Okay, I guess there is no more comment here. And for the previous agenda item, Marilia is not here. And so I guess maybe, I'm not sure if we can postpone this agenda item again to the next call. And we just have 4 minutes left. in the call itself. So I guess maybe just we can go to the any other business if there is anything that we should discuss here, and any comment. Yes, I think there was any other business item, and it's about if we should, as a working group, have a session in London meeting. I think it's a working group meeting, so just to ask working group members if they think that's something we should have. Any comment? Yes, Olivier, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Rafiq. It's Olivier speaking. So as far as I understand at the moment, the London meeting is going to be a very crowded meeting indeed. I understand that there's the GAC high-level summit on one side, there's the at-large summit on the other side, the GNSO... the CCNSO also has a number of things happening. I wonder, with the size of the venue being what it is and being quite restricted, whether it would not be wiser to perhaps not have a full... we've got two choices, that having a public meeting and a private face-to-face meeting. I would definitely say we don't need a public meeting at this stage. Maybe a private face-to-face. That's the one I would just consider. Private as in, you know, just a working group face-to-face. 1 hour in a small room where we can discuss our next steps and so on. But I would say is probably the right thing. But the size of the room would be no more than, I'd say, 15, 20 people or so. It's not a large, big room, but we would still need we would still need recording, so as to record what we're doing, and obviously remote participation again as well, just in case people are not able to make it. That's the suggestion I'd have, but maybe others might wish to have less than that.
I think it's just face-to-face working group meeting. We may have two people. It should be like maybe the last time what we had in Singapore. So we just need to request a meeting room, at least maybe as the placeholder, just in case. And we can ask this, but yeah, that's it. Just kind of face-to-face, and maybe we can assess later if we still need that or not. And as you said, it's the London schedule looks really, really packed. It's not, if we add also the discussion, it's going to be about the IANA transition and the accountability. I think indeed there will be the shift of focus toward those issues than internet governance issues in general. So, okay.
Rafiq, Olivier?
Yes.
Thank you. It's Olivier speaking. I realize we're at the top of the hour and I have to go in a second, but just regarding that room, I would suggest, yes, go ahead, ask for a meeting, for a face-to-face meeting, because then we would be guaranteed to have a room at that point. If
yes.
We don't, and I understand that it's on the 15th of May the opportunity closes to ask for a meeting. If we don't, at that point, the available rooms that are left are allocated on a first-come, first-served basis at the venue itself. And looking at how small the venue is, it's highly unlikely that there will be any spare capacity. So better do that. If we don't need the room, we can always... closer to the date, we can always cancel that room, and that will be absolutely used by other people, they'll be ever so happy to be able to take that room up. So that's what I would suggest.
That was the suggestion, and I think we need to ask Alexandra. This is an action item for Alexandra, just to send the request for us for a meeting room in London, just in case. So that's, I think we are in a violent and strong agreement here. Okay. I think that's it for today. And yes, Olivia, please join your next call. thanks everybody for joining and participating today in this call, and see you soon. So the call is adjourned. Please stop the recording. Bye-bye.